Welcome to another episode of Sharing the Hope from the Mike and Mason Foundation. Today I'm joined by Molly Trexler. Molly is a pediatric nurse practitioner and founder of Heartstrings. So she has a distinguished academic background and she's the first cardiac care pediatric nurse practitioner at her hospital and has an extensive experience across cardiology, neurosurgery, intensive care, trauma, and orthopedics. Molly's perspective was profoundly transformed when her daughter underwent brain surgery at age 3, deepening her empathy for families navigating complex medical challenges. The personal experience inspired her to create Heartstrings, a coaching program for mothers of children with congenital heart disease, focused on mindset shifts and resilience. Well, welcome to the show, Molly.
Thanks so much for having me. It was so nice to meet you at MPCQIC last fall.
Yes, that was awesome. I love that conference, mostly for the meeting people part. I mean, the stuff's good too, but...
It is. Absolutely. It was quite the event.
Yeah. First question I typically ask, How did you come to learn about congenital heart defects?
I first learned about congenital heart defects as a PICU nurse, which is where I found my love of bedside nursing, immediately gravitated towards the heart kiddos. And when I decided to go back for my nurse practitioner, I actually arranged for my first job to be working with our cardiac surgeon. So I had the distinct honor of assisting him with taking care of kids before, during, and after surgery. So I got to scrub in and first assist. And so I got to intimately know congenital heart disease and the repairs. And there's nothing more beautiful than seeing a real live heart beating.
Yeah. That's always something that stands out in my mind kind of crazily because, you know, after the surgeries, a lot of times the chest is still open and you can see everything and that.
You can.
As a non-medical person who had kind of steered clear of that stuff for most of my life, it was it was both shocking, but it was also very beautiful to see it work.
It's gorgeous. It's the most beautiful organ. And really to see what these surgeons are able to do on hearts that are the size of a small strawberry is absolutely mind-blowing and impressive.
Yeah, because I mean, I think that's something when your child is diagnosed with HLHS, One of the first things you do is, you know, you Google it and eventually you're going to run into pictures, right? And They show the heart and the HLHS problem and this is the surgery we're going to do. And these are all like really big pictures on a screen, right? And then like, you see it in practice and it's like, no, it's like a strawberry, like a walnut or a strawberry. Walnut. It's tiny.
tiny. And you know, in surgery, we wear loops that magnify it greatly, the field greatly. But every once in a while, you kind of peek below that and you're like, yeah, that's really small. Yeah. And then you go back to your loops.
Okay, good. I'm glad. So that makes sense of the way this is done.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always
blown these are important. My mind. Exactly. And it's just miraculous. You do the surgery and then you start the heart up and it's the most beautiful thing in the world.
So you're working with children with congenital heart defects coming back from surgeries. What made you interested in the single ventricle problem in particular?
Specifically single ventricles because it's often the most complex of all congenital heart disease. It's not something that we have a fix for. But it is something with the 3 palliative surgeries that we are getting better at every single day. And there's nothing more satisfying than seeing progress. In the span of my career, it's tremendous. Norwood outcomes are so much better. We're getting better with Glenn physiology. Our care of Fontan patients is improving day by day. And really, in the 29 years that I've been doing this, it's remarkable how much progress we've made. So it's great to feel like you're really making a difference.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about IMPACT.
IMPACT is our intra-stage, so between Norwood and Glenn, monitoring program at Dell Children's Medical Center. I have the great fortune of working with Eileen Stewart and Janine McCoy and Chris Dillingham, who's another nurse practitioner. And we monitor all of the IMPACT babies or the cardiac monitoring from Norwood to Glenn. So similar to other interstage programs, we monitor their weights daily, their sats daily, how much they're taking by mouth versus NG tube. We just basically keep a very close eye on them, but allow them to go home and kind of have a little break from the hospital before their next surgery.
Right. So you basically get people out during
during
their interstage period.
It's a very intense program. We follow up weekly, usually, and we're reviewing data on the babies pretty much daily.
Good deal. And so when did that program start?
I believe it's been in progress, you know, for many, many years. I think they finally named it Impact probably 8 years ago. It's been a while.
Okay, good deal. So is that something that came out of NPC learning or?
Yes. So all of this, even when I started back 29 years ago, the thought of interstage monitoring was just coming about and realizing how tenuous that interstage period is. So as teams started to develop and share ideas, it kind of caught on, and each major center now has some form of an interstage monitoring program like we do.
Right. Yeah. Because I remember when we were home, we had take weights every day. You fill out the feed form, you'd send in, you take the O2 sats and all that, and you'd send it in, and then you'd check in about every week. So yeah, I think that's become kind of a standard these days.
It is. It is very standard, and technology helps. We now have an app, you know, that we can use, and they can just put the baby on the scale. It's a Bluetooth scale. And so it's definitely improved technology-wise.
That's good. How did you become involved with NPCQIC?
So when I joined the Impact team about a year ago, the first thing Dr. Stewart said to me is like, hey, there's a fall learning session for NPCQIC. Make sure that you have it on your calendar because we're all going. And man, I was blown away by that conference. What I really enjoyed best is that we had a bunch of families there, and not just families there listening, families there participating and really sharing their feedback. And I've been to many, many conferences over the years, and there's always families there, but they weren't as integrated as they are at NPCQIC. And I love the fact that they had family-only sessions, which I thought was great. Kick all the providers out.
Yeah, you talk bad about the doctor. No.
Yeah, exactly. No. We don't want them weighing in.
Yeah. Was that also your first experience of Fawn as well, I'm guessing, because it's so integrated now?
Yes, it was. So prior to Impact, I was doing transplants. So I was very interested in the Fawn network because of the connection to heart transplant.
Okay, I got you. So what did you really like about NPC? / Fawn. I guess it's going to be SV1 possibly by the time this airs. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Like I said before, I love that the families were integrated, but I love the openness of all the centers to share what they're doing, what's working well, what they're having challenges with, because everybody has things that go well and things that they're struggling with. And the fact that you put kind of all center competition aside and come together and really focus on what's best for the babies, children, and adults is just amazing. Yeah. Love it. It's very collaborative.
Right. I think that's probably what I love best about it too, is that there's no, I know what's best. Mm-hmm. Listen to me. It's very much, we all need to weigh in on this and do it together.
Right. The competition, if there were one, is how can everybody be in the best categories of measurements possible?
Right. So was there anything in particular that you saw or that you've seen before or since the conference that you're really excited about?
I love the coming together as a continuum, because really it starts on day one. Even in the interstage, we're setting success up for the Glen, which then sets up success for the Fontan. And keeping them healthy and happy for as long as possible is what everyone's goal is. And I'm just so excited that it's coming together to be SV1. And really, it never stops.
Watching it evolve slowly over time, I'm very excited about them coming together. You know, I'm a nerd. And so the data side of things is what I'm really excited about. Yeah. You know, you have so many folks who are registered into the Fawn registry so far, but NPC mm-hmm. has such a robust registry built already. And if it becomes one registry, then what you're doing is not so much forcing a person or a patient to register in both, but you've kind of just, oh, we already have their up to 1 year here, and all we need to do is backfill to wherever they're at now. And for, you know, the older folks, that could take time. But for anybody coming into the line right now, it's just, we just keep going.
Exactly. And then it creates that collaboration where, like, oh, the dad is going to keep going, so we got to keep up with everything. And it's great. It's a natural progression of the organizations.
Yes. We've talked a lot about your experience as a provider, as a nurse practitioner, but you also, you have an experience from the other side of the ball. Tell us about that, about being a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing quite like being on the other side of medicine, as I initially called it. When my daughter was three, she developed debilitating headaches, and they were really scary headaches for a three-year-old. Had to go through a series of workups, people thinking it was just more run-of-the-mill things. And I knew when my mom got that it was not run-of-the-mill and it was something bad. Fortunately, it wasn't as bad as I had imagined. We discovered that Allie had a Chiari malformation. And that is where the base of her skull, you know, there's a hole at the bottom of your skull. It was too small and it was essentially pinching her brainstem. Okay. And so her cerebral spinal fluid was getting caught inside her head, and that's what was giving her headaches. And so even though I knew all about Chiari malformations, I knew how to take care of a Chiari malformation, when it becomes your child, it's real.
Yeah.
And I was very blessed to have a neurosurgeon in my life by the name of Tim George, who immediately, I was like, Tim George is doing the surgery. But there's still something that's so powerful about having to hand over your baby to somebody else and allow them to try to fix her. It's terrifying. And so what I found in that experience is that I noticed a lot of behaviors I was doing, kind of controlling behaviors. I was irritable, snapping at my husband. He will confirm. And then one afternoon, one evening, we were sitting on the couch and I looked at him. I was like, I'm just scared. I'm scared of all of this, even though I know things. I'm terrified. And it was in that moment, it was like a light bulb went off. And I was like, I understood family so much better. And I went through some other family medical crises. And, you know, there's just nothing that replaces that experience. And so my care for families totally evolved after that. Fortunately, Allie did well after surgery. She continued to struggle for about 6 months to a year, but really is back to being a normal child. And there were times when I like had to remind myself, she's fine now, because you still want to kind of keep her in that bubble.
Right.
It was all very good lessons. So as I was approaching being a nurse practitioner for 20 years, I was like, hey, maybe there's a way to use my skills differently. And one of the things that I enjoy most is helping families navigate it. Back when I worked with our CV surgeon, he would talk very high level and then he'd leave the room and I'd be like, okay, what he said was, and I would re-explain everything. And, you know, parents are like, oh, thank God you did that. I had no idea what he was talking about. So I just really like the aspect of kind of having families that don't have this experience in medicine and walking them through what's possible and kind of having them feel more comfortable, more prepared, more confident in their ability to advocate for their child. Mm-hmm. And so that's what led to Heartstrings.
Okay. Tell me more about Heartstrings.
So I decided that I was going to try to see if, you know, medical coaching is around for like personal fitness and other aspects of coaching that are great to an individual. This is a little bit of a spin because I'm coaching parents of children. I developed a 9-week program based on my version of the 4 P's of faith, which are pardon, power, peace, and purpose. And we do lessons based on each one of these pillars. And the first and foremost is always pardon. I always make sure that families know that having a baby with congenital heart disease is not the result of something they did or did not do. And it's kind of crazy. The number of people are like, Thank you so much for saying that. I hadn't really done that yet. Yeah. I hadn't really pardoned myself. I can tell you as a mom, I did that with my daughter. I was like, what did I do? Did I drink a Diet Coke when I was pregnant? What was it?
You know? Yeah. What did I do? Why is, you know, is this my fault?
What did I do to cause this as her mom? Once we get that as the foundation, then we start working on different aspects, how to surround yourself with support, how to say yes to support, because we're not very good at saying yes to support, how to pick your team, how to advocate for your child, how to take care of yourself, take care of your marriage, take care of, you know, other children, because it's a unit. And I really would like to see the families thrive, not just survive.
Right. It's extremely important for the medical outcomes of the child when you have a thriving family, right? If the better the home condition is, even from a psychological, neurological perspective, the better the outcomes are.
Right. Yeah. And if you have parents that are empowered and confident at your bedside, you're like, I can do this. I mean, even babies pick up on it. If you get a really anxious mom, you can see the baby can kind of get anxious too. And so I just love coaching them through that. Like, you've got this. We can figure this all out.
Yeah.
And it makes a big difference.
Yeah. And that's not to say don't have anxiety, right? Or you're going to hurt the people. But recognize that you have anxiety and then try to work on it.
Correct. Well, and how can you keep it at a reasonable level? There's no going through any medical experience without anxiety. What I like to do is called flip the script. You're like, I'm worried about what if this happens? What if that happens? What if something goes wrong in surgery? And I like to just kind of say, well, what if it doesn't? Are we using the energy that is so precious, you know, because we're running these parents ragged? Can we use it to be more effective? Can you be more present? You know, things like that. And it really helps moms just kind of go, oh, you're right. I don't need to worry about that right now. Like things that haven't even happened.
Yeah, there's no need to worry about like 10 years from now.
Right.
That's not a thing.
Let's work on the next gate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good. So, okay. And so how did you develop this? It comes from an idea, right? Which is a wonderful idea. How did you bring this into reality?
I really relied on my experience. And then I really pulled from the moms that I work with. And once I started paying attention, I was like, oh, so it just kind of came together naturally. Like there's a foundation. You got to understand your child's condition. You got to have a circle of support and you got to figure out how to take care of yourself. And then, okay, so the moms that can do that start off at a much better place. And then we work on, okay, now all these fears are happening. How do I calm them? How do I stay calm when it's so chaotic? And how do I make sure that I'm still having normal conversations with my partner or husband when it's not just all consuming? And what that does is it just makes for a better experience. And then in the end of Heartstrings, we focus on how can I give back now that I'm in a better place? And then how do I continue to advocate for my child, yet keep them in the normal category, like remove the bubble? You know?
Right. Yeah. let them be as normal as they can be.
Yes, exactly. And then the last part, which I did myself, I am guilty of it, but I really encourage moms not to write their story. Let the child write their own story of their life. Don't limit it. Don't put barriers on it. I mean, if there's some physical limitations, that's one thing, but don't put those limitations on from a parent perspective.
Right.
Let them go as far and as wide as they can.
I think what we've seen from a lot of the older Fontan patients is that when their parents did that, kind of let them do their own thing as much as they possibly could, they had better outcomes.
Right.
It sort of reminds me of like the everything going on in the exercise and sports realm, which it's sort of like we went from a place maybe 10 years ago, actually 10 years ago, where it was be very gentle, you know, if they want to sit out, that's fine. They, you know, don't push them. And before that, it was like no activity.
Right.
To now where it's like, yeah, if you can get, you know, the more competitive sports you can get them in, the better off they'll be later on.
Exactly. Exactly. It's good for their physiology. And that's a huge credit to NPC-QIC because they're now pushing that. Like, no, we want our Fontans exercising. And I've been very fortunate. Dr. Stewart is great about that. She's like, we're doing all this to give them as normal of a life as possible. We don't do this to keep them in a bubble.
Right. Right. Yeah. What's kind of your thoughts about what you want to do with heartstrings, maybe in the short term, and then maybe what's sort of, is there a longer term goal?
Yeah, absolutely. I am in the short term really hoping to find people when they need it most, which is kind of in that beginning stage when the world is so overwhelming. And just being able to be a resource and a guide at that phase would be incredible. I think a lot of times it's so overwhelming that they don't know where to turn and what to do, especially like in your case, if it's a postnatal diagnosis, you're like,
yeah. Everything's
just, wow.
You know, you get hit basically by a Mack truck.
Exactly.
As you transfer from one hospital to another and realize, oh, I'll be here for a couple weeks to a couple months.
Right. Versus taking a baby home versus taking a baby to surgery.
Right.
So I would love to learn how to meet people there and really serve as a resource and a guide in the short term. In the long term, I hope to kind of form a community where people can get on. And there's so many resources out there. There's so many like small foundations. I would love to have it be like a place where you can go and learn all things CHD or complex medical illness, because it's the beauty of heartstrings is it works for anybody or any illness. I'm right. Actually coaching a friend's mother whose daughter has a brain tumor.
Okay.
And so it works on adults, it works on kids, it works on everything in between. So I hope to really broaden it to help as many people as possible. Because encountering the medical system is scary.
Yeah, it is really this whole other world. Even from kind of a baseline physical standpoint, most major cities have like a section of the city carved out now that's sort of like the medical city or the medical center. And there's like 10 hospitals there.
Exactly.
Like just the first time you drive into that zone and you're like, where do I park? Where do I go? Like what is...
Exactly.
How do I get to my child?
Right. Right. And then you're often in a different city and you don't have resources. And so you're having to rebuild a life oftentimes in a in a medical city. Yeah. You're like, is there a Ronald McDonald's? I don't even know. Where am I going to stay? Yeah. So it's very intimidating. And I think having somebody like myself who understands what it means and can kind of say, okay, we're going to break this in. You know, one of my favorite sayings is how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Bite at a time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to break it down into chunks. Okay. We need to figure out where you're staying. Then we can build from there.
That's good. So you provide coaching, right? Do you have any other coaches?
No, it would be lovely to add more coaches in the future.
Okay.
I hope this catches on. It's new. There's nobody else doing this.
But I think there's a need for it. And
there is.
You know, traditionally in a market-driven environment, what we see is if you provide a solution to the need, it's going to go well.
Yes. Yeah. But it also, in my case, requires a little education that it's out there. Right. So doing things like this, spending time with you, spending time on social media, just to say, we could do this another way.
Right.
It could be another, there are help and options, and you have somebody who's cheering you on 100% of the time.
Would you see this as kind of like you have a chapter in a bunch of cities attached to different, not just heart centers, but children's hospitals or just hospitals in general?
That would be amazing. And one of the things that's incredible in this day and age of Zoom is that I can be anywhere. I can be in Tennessee or Dallas, or, you know, I can provide support where you're at. We're no longer limited by face-to-face.
Yeah. I still enjoy face-to-face better, but
I do too.
There is an amazing amount that can be done over Zoom as long as everybody's paying attention.
So true. But it's great because moms will do sessions in like their car. They're like, this is my alone time. And I was like, perfect, let's do it.
Yeah.
Or in a hospital room. I've done hospital rooms and I can meet you wherever you're at.
That's good. How do you see your involvement in groups like, you know, SB1? There are other groups out there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that sort of evolving as time goes on?
Well, I think SV1 is kind of the example of how it should be done right now because of the level of collaboration. It is really remarkable. I think they're also really redefining family involvement in a lot of these organizations and emphasizing the importance of family involvement and participation, presentation at all levels. They're really setting a great example to other areas of medicine on how important it is to have all levels participate with the same level of importance.
Right. That's one of the things I think that was very telling. I remember seeing one of the presentations talk about how people ranked what was the most important thing. And mm-hmm. you had the doctors ranked, and it was all very medical oriented stuff. And mm-hmm. then you went to the patients, and most of the top stuff was quality of life stuff, not necessarily right. the medical stuff. And then everybody's right. kind of staring at each other like, oh, I didn't really see it from that. Like,
yes.
You know, these treatments may be getting your O2 sats just slightly better, but they're costing you so much on the whole living or life side of things that we really have to take into account.
Right. And having the FON network almost be like a mirror for the future, like them saying, hey, this is what we're seeing as a problem, and we need to start addressing it way back here before the FONTAN. And not waiting until it's a problem once you are a FONTAN. That's been great because you can kind of see how we're setting them up for success and how cool it is to be like, all right, if we start changing the way we do things back here, it will only domino effect into the future.
Right. And that is the ounce of prevention is worth the pound of cure, right?
If I can, yeah, exactly.
If I can set it up so you don't even have the problem later, then that's what I want to do.
Right. But then the quality of life that you brought up, we've got to be mindful. Like, are we just extending, or we want to extend quality life, not right. quantity life. And so taking that into consideration, like what does make a difference, and starting that as early as possible, like exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. What advice would you have for somebody who is interested in getting involved?
Well, I think in the beginning, all you hear is white noise. It's so overwhelming. And a lot of us kind of just shut down mm-hmm. when it gets to be that level of overwhelm. And so I think the easiest thing, maybe not the easiest, that's not the right word. The best thing to do is actually verbalize it. It's not always easy, but to say to your team, I'm overwhelmed. I don't understand. And I need a minute. Having that courage to say, I need some help with this is the best first step, because it allows, number one, allows the team in to understand where you're at and where you need support the most, and then build from there. But I think a lot of times people go, yeah, I understand. And they don't.
Yeah. There's always the onus on saying yes, right? Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the reality is, like, you know, I heard 5 out of 10 words.
Right.
It's all just
exactly. 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 And then hopefully you had somebody who I was back then for family. So, okay, let me tell you what he really said, you know. And the nurses are also great at that. They're like, no, I was listening. This is what he said. And so just really being open to being supported. I think we're all tend to be very self-sufficient adults in the world. But mm-hmm. when you enter the world of CHD, it's like you've showed up at a new planet.
Yeah. It's a whole new deal.
It is. It is.
So if somebody was interested in Heartstrings, where would they go? How would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I have a website. It's www.MollyTrexler.com. And then I also have Molly Trexler Coaching on Instagram and Facebook.
Awesome. So MollyTrexler.com. And then find Molly on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. And like the Michael Mason Foundation while you're on there too.
Yeah. I'd be okay with that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Okay, so I have 2 questions I always ask at the end. It's kind of a jump. You don't have to answer them because I didn't prep you.
Ooh, fun.
The first one is, okay, so one of the reasons we started the podcast is because on social media, we were, I'm not going to say continuously, but often encountering stories where parents would be given the diagnosis and then they, you know, were talked to by a cardiologist who maybe had read about HLHS 20 years ago while they were in college. And at that time, it was, the prognosis was not good. Correct. And so the, what they hear is not good. So if you had a parent like that, what would be your advice for them?
My advice would be there are thousands of amazing HLHS kids running around out there. It is different because we've gotten better every single day of every single year, and we're continuing to do so. It's completely different. It used to be a 100% fatal condition, and now we've got kids thriving into their adulthood with Fontans. So I would say, don't give up on these kiddos. They deserve a fighting chance, and we're getting really good at it, and we get better every day.
Good. I like it. Good answer.
Yes.
All right. So final question. All right. So whereabouts do you live, if you don't mind me?
I live in Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas. Okay. So this will be good. So if I find myself in Austin, Texas.
Yes.
Where do I have to go eat?
Oh, Fonda San Miguel.
Oh, instantly. You had it ready to go. That was great.
Yeah. Fonda San Miguel. Fonda. There's a lot of, you know, fancy places, but Fonda has been in Austin. I'll give you two. So that's really nice Mexican. And then I would say Maudie's is kind of Tex-Mex.
Okay.
But Fonda first.
Fonda San Miguel and Maudie's. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Good deal.
I stayed in the Mexican category. All the barbecue places are going to be so mad at me.
That's okay. That's okay. You can find the barbecue places pretty easily.
My gosh. There's a lot of them, and they're very good, but they've got long lines. So I'm not into waiting in line.
I'm there too. I'm not patient anymore.
Maudie's, you can walk in. Fonda, it's probably better to have a reservation.
Okay. Good deal. So next time I'm down there, I'll have to check in.
Yeah, and you're in Dallas.
Dallas.
And now, what is your answer to that? Next time I'm in Dallas.
Oh, that's a tough one. So, the honest truth is, you have to find a local to the specific part of Dallas you're in.
That's true.
And ask them about the barbecue place.
Okay.
Because every little suburb has their own place. So it's where I'm
so
where
true.
I'm at, in Forney, Texas, it's Four T's Barbecue.
Four T's, okay.
Four T's. And it's in like a little, you know, probably 50 to 70 year old shopping strip.
Great.
That just has a white and red sign that says barbecue on it. It doesn't even
That's
have the
the
name.
Place to go.
Yes.
Yes. That is, I agree. I will look for that if ever I'm in Forney, Texas.
Yeah. But that's my advice. That's why I ask you, because you're a local.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Good deal. All right. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
No, I just can't thank you enough for this opportunity. It's really been a lot of fun talking with you and swapping ideas. And I wish Micah and you all the best. And if ever I can help you guys in any way, let me know.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. We'll definitely be in touch.
Okay. Sounds great.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And for everybody who tuned in, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of Sharing the Hope from the Micah Mason Foundation.